You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. We all know that person who just loves olives or who absolutely will not eat that slice of pizza if there are any mushrooms on it. But where do these taste preferences come from?
Her next guest may have some answers, and she says it's possible to actually change our tastes for certain foods and ultimately train ourselves and our kids to be healthier eaters. Joining us now is Bea Wilson. She's the author of the new book, First Bite, How We Learn to Eat. Her book draws on the research of psychologists, scientists, and historians to show us why we eat the way we do, for better or worse. Bea, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of us think of eating as an act of instinct and that our preferences for certain foods or dislikes of others as being pretty much built in. But you write that, no, we learn what to eat and what to like to eat. How do we learn these food preferences?
Well, we learn it from the earliest days of childhood onwards. And you're absolutely right. I think most of us think of our likes and dislikes as some kind of quirk of personality. We say, I'm a chocoholic, or I'm a meat lover, or we kind of make friends with other people that hate licorice. And it becomes such a strong part of our identity that we don't imagine it could ever change. But if you look into the process of how we actually learn to eat, it seems that almost all of our tastes are a function of exposure. But some of it's the exposure that's happened to us when we were babies, long before we're conscious that this is what's happening. So it even happens in utero. There was an amazing experiment done with pregnant mothers where they were asked to drink a lot of carrot juice in the last trimester of pregnancy. And they actually went on to have babies who, when they took their first bites of solid food, preferred carrot-flavoured cereal. It was as if they'd been imprinted with these wonderful memories of how great carrot tasted.
Well, I guess what you're describing here is part of why we should be easy on ourselves when we're trying to change our eating habits, because these aren't things that you can just shrug off at a moment's notice if you've been learning them since in utero, right? So what does that tell us
Absolutely.
About how to change habits?
Yeah, you've really put your finger on it. We should be so much kinder to ourselves and not talk in these awful moralistic terms about sort of saying that because we want some chocolate cake that somehow makes us naughty, or talking about foods being virtuous or bad. It's not that at all. And as you say, this is a question of habits and preferences which we've acquired over a lifetime, and it's not very easy to drop preferences at will. But the good news is it is possible to modify them over time and completely change your relationship with food. And I know I did it. That was part of my starting point for writing the book. Looking back and thinking, as a teenager, I used to be seriously unhappy about food. I was a compulsive eater. There was no stop button. If there was cake or pastries in the house, there was no question of me just having one slice. And it was partly a response to living with my sister, who was anorexic. I sort of felt somebody needed to be eating. And it was partly to do with lots of other things. But somehow, over a period of time, it wasn't about going on a diet. I changed my relationship with food. I found that it was okay to eat a hearty meal without feeling guilty. And I learned how to stop when I was full. And I feel so grateful now, looking back, that I've somehow acquired a whole new set of eating skills. And I can totally see it's got nothing to do with willpower or any of these other categories we kind of impose on ourselves to beat ourselves up. It's a form of learning, and it creates this huge divide that we hardly talk about in our food culture between those of us who find the whole matter of eating in a fairly balanced way quite easy, quite straightforward, and people who find it really difficult.
Yeah, right. Bea, I think the choice often is I'm going to stop eating the really good food that I enjoy and eat the really awful stuff, but that's healthy, and that's the road to healthy eating. And you're saying, no, take that healthy stuff and figure out how we can appreciate it, right?
Absolutely. You've put it so well. There's this polarity in our food culture, which is, you know, health is one thing, pleasure's another thing. Well, how are we ever meant to eat better if we think that? Because we all need a little comfort in this life. This is where most diets go wrong. And I found some really interesting studies. Sometimes people say diets never work. No one succeeds in losing weight long term. That's not true. It looks as if around a fifth of people that need to lose weight, large amounts of weight, do succeed in keeping it off. But one of the things is that they don't so rigidly force themselves to eat these foods that go against their own preferences. You know, they keep some of their comfort foods going, but then slowly, slowly, through a process of kind of reconditioning, their palates change to the point where those super fatty, super salty, super sweet foods don't appeal to them so much anymore. And at that point, it's really easy not to eat the fast food because you're not resisting it. You're just thinking, no, that doesn't really speak to me.
We're talking right now with Bea Wilson. She is the author of First Bite, How We Learn to Eat. And Bea, speaking of learning to eat, how do you learn to appreciate asparagus, say, if you don't like it? What if you are someone, I know people who literally have aversions to vegetables. These are grown adults. They don't enjoy them. They don't want to eat them. How do you turn something that's been viewed as a disgusting food into something that you draw pleasure from?
It's really difficult. There's a few different ways. And I think maybe a strategy for adults might be different than a strategy for kids. I mean, I've spoken to adults who, it's a huge hidden problem of adult picky eaters who are stuck in very limited tastes and sometimes will even refuse invitations to eat with friends because they genuinely might gag at new food on their plate. And often vegetables are the problem food. With that, some people I've spoken to who have succeeded in learning to like vegetables and recalibrate their palates as adults. One guy said to me, I decided I wasn't going to eat any of the vegetables that I associated with childhood. So he didn't eat green beans or carrots. He only ate vegetables which he would never have seen as a child, such as butternut squash and sugar snap peas. That worked for him. But there's another revolutionary technique which has been incredibly successful. It's quite new. It was only pioneered over the last 10 years and it's been used on kids, but it does also seem to work on adults when the motivation is there. And it's called tiny tastes. And the thought is, just as you've said, if you hate asparagus, you really don't want to put asparagus in your mouth because that's horrible. It's not a pleasant experience. And we know that the way we get to like new foods is through exposure. But it only works when the exposures feel positive, and just the act of putting asparagus in your mouth doesn't feel positive. But if you can somehow reduce the piece of food, asparagus or broccoli, whatever it might be, down to the size of a pea or even a grain of rice, suddenly it's possible to put it in your mouth. And you can do this multiple times. And I did it with my own youngest child, who was by far my pickiest eater. He was born with cleft palate, which didn't help. I was much more anxious about him, which also didn't help. And I was amazed. I thought this sounds too simple to be true, but he somehow didn't feel offended by trying something when it was that small. And it converted him to eggplant, cabbage, omelettes. You know, we're still working on spinach and quite a few others. So it's not like you're going to get there straight away.
Well, as a parent, I've done some of that right. So good for me, but bad for me. I think there are times when the kid doesn't eat something, it raises the stakes, raises some anxiety and drama at the table. That's not going to help anybody, is it?
No, but it's so hard not to react. And we also need to sort of get beyond the guilt of feeding. I've made masses of mistakes, some of which I talk about in the book, with feeding my own three kids. And it's very hard not to let the emotions of the situation get to us because we love our children so much. Feeding is such a primal emotion. We want to see them fed. We've put time and effort into trying to produce a halfway nourishing meal, and we don't want to see it chucked on the floor or rejected, and that's not very pleasant. So it's very hard. But yeah, the more you can somehow see that the end goal here is to make eating fun and that you're actually trying to raise someone who feels so good about vegetables that one day they'll choose them of their own accord, that changes things.
We're talking with Bea Wilson. She's the author of the new book, First Bite, How We Learn to Eat, and we'd like to hear from you.
Are you a picky eater, or maybe you're struggling with changing bad eating habits? What have you done to change the way that you think about food? Or maybe you've got some advice on teaching your kids to actually enjoy healthy foods. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with author Bea Wilson about her latest book, First Bite, How We Learn to Eat.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is there a food as a grown-up or a kid that you just can't eat? You know it's healthy. You know it's good for you. It disgusts you. You don't want anything to do with it. We'd love to hear about that. Have you had success or failure in trying to feed healthy food to your kids? What went right? What went wrong? Or have you successfully adapted your own self to eat a new kind of food? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And B, one question as we have this discussion is, how should we think about food? You write that our culture is food obsessed. Even food writers and chefs are obsessed with food in a way that might not be so healthy. And then you've got the obesity problem on the other hand. So how do you go forward from that, still enjoy food, but have a healthy relationship?
Well, I think the good news is that when you change your eating habits for the better, you don't get there through a state of denial and guilt. You actually get there through pleasure. You get there through sort of a sensory exploration of new foods. And I also know, speaking for myself, when you're stuck in disordered ways of eating, including overeating, mealtimes themselves are not such a pleasure. You know, you might be eating a lot of food and people call that indulgence, but I can tell you it doesn't feel like indulgence when you're trapped in habits of dependency. Whereas I've found once you, it takes time, it takes a lot of time, but once you've got to the point where you think, I can stretch the hours out between meals a bit longer and actually feel a little bit more hungry for my meals, you enjoy them so much more. But it's no wonder that so many of us have disordered relationships with food, whether it's overeating, undereating, anorexia, all of the extreme forms of picky eating. Because as you say, our culture is itself very dysfunctional in the relationship with food. We're kind of encouraged to demonize many of the foods that we love the most. And it's sometimes really hard to unpack the emotions of eating. You know, if you look at something like hunger, that seemed to me, before I started writing the book, that it should be something really simple, really instinctive, just like breathing. And then you look into the science of it, and there are all these complex biomarkers, these hormones. But scientists haven't really put their finger on how you can absolutely objectively tell when someone is hungry or not, because hunger isn't really an objective state. It's highly subjective. Sometimes the thing we were hungry for was actually love or home or security.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Karen on the line in Elk Mound. Karen, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
Well, I just wanted to share that my ex-husband, when I was married to him, he always said he couldn't eat fruits or vegetables because he was allergic to them. And his mother had been allergic to them also. And it made their throat itch. Well, I don't think he liked vegetables, so he used it as an excuse. Mm. And one of my children growing up saw him eat more frequently and develop the same habit of not eating fruits and vegetables.
Karen, thanks so much for that call. And that reminds me of something you mentioned in your book, B, that for a parent, the best way to instill good eating habits is to model good eating habits.
Yeah, absolutely. But then this is so hard because so many of us have our own baggage around food. I think that's a really important point that that listener made, because one of the, other than exposure, which is the single best way you get to like new foods, the second best way is social conditioning. So this can work in a really positive way. If you see a parent modeling, enjoying eating a range of foods, whether it's vegetables or just other wholesome home-cooked food, that's going to be way more powerful than any lecture on healthy eating. But equally, if you see a parent modeling a dysfunctional relationship with food, it's really hard to get beyond that. That was an important point for someone to raise.
Don't you also say at some point, if you can't get your kids to eat them any other way, it's okay to lie? And you talk about, is it Denmark where they tell a lie about carrots?
It's Hungary. I mean, I'm half joking, but I also, so I'm saying, I don't really get why governments think that the way to get adults to change their eating habits is constantly to give us this advice and lectures. And it's, I'm saying, you know, it's as if we say to a child, I strongly advise you to eat that cabbage and follow it with a glass of milk. That doesn't work. The way that you get a child to eat better is example, patient exposure, and lots of repetitions. But when that fails, you lie. And in Hungary, Hungarian friends have told me, the way they get kids to eat carrots is they tell them, eat carrots and you'll be able to whistle. And apparently they eat a lot of carrots in Hungary. So I sort of think those kind of lies, it's in a way, what I see that as being is a sort of tiny bit of pro-healthy food propaganda to offset against the mass of food propaganda we're given in the opposite direction. If you think of all the messages a child is exposed to about, you know, you see these adverts of these wonderful godlike athletes drinking sugary beverages and cartoon characters who are so cute on the boxes of these sugary cereals. So, yeah, a few little white lies, but I'm not really saying lie. The other stuff, the social conditioning and the exposure should be enough.
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Cindy on the line in Milwaukee. Cindy, hi.
Yes, hi there. I have to admit that I used psychology on my kids when they were younger. I would push the bowl of vegetables away from them. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're not old enough. Like, I'm old enough. I'm like, okay. So then I'd give them some. Of course, they liked it because they were old enough.
That's kind of genius.
Yeah, I don't
know. That's really clever.
It seems like there's got to be a downside there somewhere. But if it worked for Cindy, I guess that's okay, B.
I think it's brilliant. I think actually the more open-minded we can be and just mix things up completely, because so many of our problems, another listener on a different radio show I was doing phoned in and said, you know, we have this thing that we say, eat your broccoli and then you can have some ice cream. And that just makes the ice cream into a huge treat and the broccoli into something unpleasant. She said every time her son did some great homework or practiced his musical instrument, she gave him a cup of vegetables. So he associated it with a kind of like a prize. Hmm. I think it's amazing. I would never quite dare do that myself because maybe I'm not as free and open-minded. But yeah, use psychology all you can.
We've got a comment here on Facebook, I think. Mary says, I completely agree with B. I hated broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts as a kid and as adult, and recently tried Romanesco broccoli, and it was so different. I loved it. Now I eat cauliflower and Brussels sprouts too. Still working on broccoli, but the Romanesco did the trick. So I guess she was trying sort of the tiny taste model where she just keeps trying new things.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. And also that model of if those old vegetables have bad associations, just try something new. That's great.
Talking to Bea Wilson about her book, First Bite, How We Learn to Eat. Back to your calls now with Terry in West Bend. Terry, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Terry?
Well, when I was raising my kids, and they're both in their 20s now, I never made them eat something that they didn't want to eat, but they had to put it in their mouth. If they didn't want to try it, they could spit it out, but they had to at least try. And they are the most adventurous eaters I know now, because they're not afraid.
Did they often spit the things out, Terry?
Actually, they didn't, because they knew they could.
Wow, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. The only food my kids have spat out that I've made is the infamous celeriac slaw. And I can't blame them. I could eat it, but it wasn't really that good. But that's that kind of trust and that permission not to like things, B, sounds like a good idea.
That's huge. I think, I mean, part of the tiny taste idea, but clearly this listener had invented it all by herself. The more we can take pressure off the kids to somehow perform or to feel that they've got to eat something, the better. Because it's dinner time, it's so emotional for both the kids and the adults. So I think that's great. It's, yeah, put something in your mouth, but you don't have to eat a whole portion. Because actually the end game isn't about the next 5 minutes and how much they eat at this or that meal. It's about hoping that they'll grow up to be an adult who chooses these things of their own accord.
And we've got a caller here. We've got Ibrahim on from Sun Prairie. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, and I've heard that there is a food that you do not like. What is it?
It's called supa.
Supa. What is supa?
Oh, it's a special type of rice sauce that's green.
A green rice sauce. And have you tried it? Have you tried the tiny taste? And how old are you? I should ask you that, too.
I'm trying a tiny bit. And I'm 8 years old.
Tried a tiny bit. Okay, so there you go, B. He's tried a tiny bit. What advice do you have for him?
Good for him. I mean, I think also the thing to remember, if you're only 8 years old, you've got a long way to go. So sometimes adults are really trying to hurry their kids into having the same range of tastes that we do. But if the things we like are mainly what we've been exposed to, well, you're only 8. You haven't had many opportunities to try it. So the fact you've tried it once doesn't mean you're not going to like it again in the future. Just, yeah, keep going.
Well, thank you so much for that call.
And Bea, in our last minute, we can be healthier and we can enjoy our food. That seems to be the core message you're trying to spread here.
Yeah, it is. And I was so delighted. The more research I did, the more I found out it's possible. It really can be done, but it requires a change of mindset. You know, once you see that eating is something we've learned, you weren't born loving cupcakes. Your taste isn't destiny. It's possible to learn new tastes and still be the same person, but to have a happier, more balanced relationship with food. And given that we're all eating three meals a day, give or take, that's a really great place to reach.
Bea, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We were talking there with Bea Wilson. She's the author of First Bite, How We Learn to Eat.
And you can keep sharing your thoughts and your food likes, dislikes, and how they've changed over the years over at the Central Time Facebook page.